When it comes to your education, there's no need to settle. Get the interactive and purposeful education that you and employers demand from Colorado State University Global Campus. You'll get personalized, career-driven learning created and taught by today's industry leaders. CSU Global was built to help students succeed with affordability, flexibility, and individualized support. It's time to expect better. Find your path to the career you want at csuglobal.edu, where online education isn't another thing we do. It's all we do.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
All right, settle down, settle down. Take your seats. Come on, let's go. Take your seats. Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, class. Welcome to Binary Gamer, where we are going to learn, play, and appreciate a little something about video games. I am your host, Tony Spears, joined by my amazing, awesomest bro host,
Wally Jacobs. What's up, guys?
We are going to be talking a little bit. Well, we're going to kind of hop on the same train as a lot of other people right now, because now that the NES Classic has been discontinued, a lot of people are talking about the SNES Classic. And because of that, there's a lot of speculation going around of like when it'll come out, if Nintendo will make enough units, things like that, and of course the games that'll be on it. But first, we're going to talk about the cancellation of the NES Classic and then get straight into pretty much our wish list, if you will, Wally. I think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yep, SNES Mini.
It could be pretty rad, dude. But first, let's start off with the cancellation of the NES Classic. So what do you know about this so far, Wally?
Well, they only sold 2.3 million. They're not coming back. And people like you have been screwed.
Yeah, screwed is definitely the word I would use, because I tried a lot during the holiday season to get my hands on it, and it's just really, it really bums me out that I couldn't get one. I spent a lot of early mornings in the cold in Tennessee trying to get my hands on one of these things, and it never ended up panning out. But you kind of got one just by luck.
Yeah, I got one on day one on via GameStop of all places. I just randomly went there the night it came out on midnight East Coast time, and I was able to order one like right before the website crashed. And within a few days, boom, I got my NES Classic Edition. It was beautiful. It was lovely. I didn't have to wait in any lines. But then I pretty much assumed that they were going to come out with more. And I thought people like you were going to benefit from this. But yeah. It never happened. And it's still not going to happen. So you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I don't understand with this is, like, even with something as simple as the NES Classic, which, if we're being completely honest with ourselves, is just a fancy Raspberry Pi or an Arduino inside of a shell that looks like a small NES. I think, honestly, when it came to the appeal of the thing, that's what people were going for. I actually know a guy that has one of these things, a person I work with, that has one that has never plugged it in. All he did was take it out of the box and he put it up on a shelf, and that was it. And I was like, why'd you spend $60 on something you're not going to play? And he's like, because I already have all these emulators on my computer. Like, I have all these games on my computer. He was like, I just want this, like, officially licensed Nintendo thing that looks like a NES, and I just want to have it as a collector. And I can respect that, but man, I was just like, dude, I will buy that off of you so I can actually play it.
Well, at the same time, at least he's not scalping it for like $200-$300,
yeah,
you know?
Which apparently is the, like, that's one of the things that just makes me lose my faith in humanity, because so many people went and just bought dozens of these things, and now we're just selling them on eBay for like, you know, $50, $60 more, sometimes $100 more. than market value, and it just, oh my god, it kills me, dude. I'm like, why do you have to do this to me?
Yeah, people are online right now with stacks and stacks of NES mini, and all they're doing is selling them for $200-$300 a pop right now, if not more.
Yeah. So real quick, I want to read this this interview that Polygon did with Reggie Fils-Aimé, President and Chief Operating Officer of Nintendo of America. And he says, we've got a lot going on right now, and we don't have unlimited resources. And this is in reference to why they decided to stop the production of the NES Classic, even though now there is, I mean, pretty much all but confirmed rumors of the Super Nintendo Entertainment System Classic, the SNES Classic, if you will. And that, like, that kind of boggles my mind, because if they don't have these unlimited resources, I'm air quoting here, then why did they decide to stop one and not put out, and are suddenly going to put out the other? And in my opinion, I think it's a lack of faith type thing. Because while the NES had some amazing games, realistically, a lot of the really, really good games on there were either stuff they couldn't get their hands on because of licensing. So, like,
yeah,
a lot of third-party stuff that they weren't able to get their hands on. And then a lot of it was, you know, like Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, things like that. But for the most part, they had kind of, like, when you look at the NES Classic, they've kind of tapped out that system when it comes to all those games. And then there are some games on there that people are like, what? Like, why did they put Star Tropics on there of all games? Like, Star Tropics is cool, but I'd rather play Earthbound.
But exactly.
Yeah, that's a whole separate thing. So I think what it was is, like, they saw the fervor for it, but also saw that people were kind of complaining about the list of games on there, but also because there were games on there there weren't games on there that people wanted, people started going through and backdooring games onto it.
Yeah.
And
at the same time, you have the Switch releasing right now, and pretty soon the eShop is going to kick off, and they're going to want to sell those same games for, you know, $6-$7 a pop, whereas they could have sold that system for $60. They might as well just cancel the whole thing and, you know, force all the new Switch people to pay the $7-$8 for the eShop games.
I mean, you're right, and in a business sense, that is the smart move. And I can't really be mad at them about that. But the whole, like, we don't have unlimited resources thing, like, I get it. Like, Nintendo's not as powerful as they used to be. Like, this isn't 1998. I get that. But, like, you're still Nintendo. You have a metric shit ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like they're going to the coffers and being like, oh, man, like, I don't know, things are starting to look dry. Like, you're still freaking Nintendo. So don't tell me you don't have the resources to produce, you know, more of these things. But
yeah,
I think you're... Yeah, but I think you're right, though, where, like, the Switch eShop is going to kick off at some point. What actually, a lot of people have doubts of whether or not the eShop will come to the Switch. Like, there are serious doubts out there in the gaming community. I don't think so. Like, I think the eShop is a inevitability, only because, like, now that the Switch is a console that you can hook up to your TV and play, or you can pick up and take, it is essentially the perfect eShop machine. Like, that is the virtual console machine of your dreams. Because now, yeah, you could go and get freaking Super Metroid or Earthbound or whatever on there, play it at home, and then you're like, oh, snap, I can play this on the go. And ta-da, you're off playing your games wherever you want, just like you are Breath of the Wild or, you know, Super Mario. Mario Odyssey, when it comes out later this year, all that stuff is going to be on the go. So the rumors of the Super Nintendo Classic kind of throw me off, because if that's going to be a thing and they do the same thing where it's like, oh, well, we're going to release it in November and then stop production in January, like, what's the point? You're just all you're doing is just creating ill will.
Yeah, the NES Classic Edition only benefits the scalpers, and we just touched upon this a minute ago, how these things are going for $200-$300 a pop, and now they could possibly go for even more now because Nintendo stopped producing these things.
Yeah, that's it's one of those things where it's only going to go up in price more as time goes on. Because as these things start getting into people's houses and people are just like not going to give them up because they are going to be so rare, mm-hmm. like it's going to come to the point to where you're going to find these things probably, I'd say probably 10 years from now, and you're going to find it in on some guy's eBay page or like a pawn shop or something like that, and it's going to be $500.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
The bad thing is some poor, desperate bastard like myself is going to pay $500 for this thing. I've never even seen one in person. That's the thing that pisses me off. I've never actually seen one in the box. No, I've never seen one in, like, IRL, bro.
I'm sorry, man.
Not nearly as sorry as I am. Like, I really missed out on that train. I tried so hard to get that money together in time to buy it, but c'est la vie.
Listen, man, it's not your fault. It's all Nintendo's fault. You definitely deserve one. You know, you have little ones of your own, and they couldn't experience this either. And that was a problem. Like families wanted this for their kids.
Yeah.
So they can experience the same games that they grew up with and all that.
And see, and that was the thing, too. Like, I legitimately wanted to get this for my kids so yeah. they could play it. Because, like what my friend from work said, like, I have all these games on an emulator on my computer. And pretty mm-hmm. soon, due to some awesome friends of mine, I'm going to have them in a portable manner as well. So like
the Raspberry Pi.
No, actually, it's, well, not to get off on a tangent, but I found a really cheap PSP online for like $30, and I'm just going to go and homebrew it and make it to where I can play a bunch of stuff. And yeah, so thanks, Sony. Appreciate that.
Emulate the shit out of everything, guys.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is like I don't like, this is going to be a completely different tangent, and I'm not trying to get off on off the rails, but if we're being completely honest, the whole debacle with the NES Classic and the way that has panned out and created such ill will in a lot of hardcore Nintendo fans, it's pushed more people toward emulation. Like, oh, yeah. I've had to walk people through how to do a setup for a Raspberry Pi because they got irritated because they're trying to do this for their kids, and same thing, like, January came around, still couldn't get their hands on one. The ones they could find online, people were selling for like $300 and stuff like that. So finally, a guy at my work was like, hey, you're good with computers, right? And I'm like, sure. And he was like, do you know anything about this Raspberry Pi thing? And I'm like, yeah, like, what do you need it for? And he basically explained to me that because he couldn't get his hands on an NES Classic for his 10-year-old, he heard that you could use a Raspberry Pi to essentially make a Nintendo with a bunch of games on it. And he's like, yeah, like, do you know how to do this? I said, yeah, I can walk you through it. And I walked him through it, and now he's got that thing for his kid, and his kid can play those games. But, you know, aesthetically, it's not the same. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're still playing Super Mario Bros. 3 on your TV. So, hey, like, more power to him. But
yeah, exactly. And you can still get those similar type of USB controls, the Nintendo ones that look exactly like the originals, and just play off of that.
Yeah, like my friend bought me a really nice, it's the 8-bit-o, I can't remember exactly the model type, but it's essentially a Super Nintendo controller that has two sticks on it, like two thumbsticks, and then it's completely programmable, it's Bluetooth, the whole nine yards. Like, in a lot of ways, emulation has become very much more appealing in the past, probably, I'd say 5-6 years, than it's ever been. Only because there's so many ways to easily do it now. But the NES Classic was hamstrung in so many ways. And, like, the short controller and the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
All that. That it just... It has pushed more people toward emulation. And it almost seems like Nintendo kind of set themselves up for failure in that way.
Well, just to touch upon what you were saying, like, for me as a collector, the prices have gone up, like, dramatically over the past 5 years, that it's almost impossible to collect for Nintendo now. It's almost impossible to collect for Super Nintendo now because the prices are just way too high.
Yeah.
And I was thrilled about the NES Classic because, you know, maybe this could have helped end that. But no, all it did was make it worse because nobody can get one.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, too, because, like, the physical carts of certain games are just so expensive now. So if you do want to do the most authentic version of that game experience, you're going to go find yourself a console that,
yeah.
you know, like maybe at like a game exchange, or if by some strange chance in the universe, you found one at like a GameStop or something like that, is going to run you like $80, $90, Which, yeah, realistically, if you look at it, that's not too bad, if you know, as long as the system's in good working order and stuff like that. But then there's certain games that if you want to play them, you're going to pay more than you did for the system, and twice as much as what the game was worth at market. Like, I once saw a copy of Sunset Riders, which, great game, don't get me wrong, but I remember playing that game with my friends when I was 12, and the it was worth $100. Like, the guy had it for $160 at this shop.
Yeah, that is way too high.
Yeah, and I was like, I was like, there's no way that's market value.
$12 at Walmart. Yeah, $12 brand new at Walmart.
Yeah, like that's what kills me is like it that cannot be market value. But then you go on places like eBay and Craigslist and stuff like that, and yeah, people are selling them for like roughly around that, maybe like plus or minus $20. But
yeah,
it blows my mind because like Sunset Riders is a cool game. Don't get me wrong, but like, it's not like,
yeah, it's not worth that.
Yeah, it's not, it's not the Mona Lisa of freaking SNES games.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand it. But then there are other games that, like, nobody cares about. Like, I have a physical copy of Mylon's Secret Castle, and yeah, I don't even have an actual NES in my house. I just bought the cart because like the game has a lot of like personal significance to me because my grandfather and I played that game. Yeah, my grandfather and I played that game together. It was the very first game my grandfather actually like sat down and got really into.
Yeah.
And so, like, to the point to where he would ask my friends if they knew anything about this game. Like, I'd be playing my friends. He'd come outside and be like, hey, you ever play that Mylon Secret Castle game? And my friends would be like, yeah, I played it with Tony. And he's like, you ever figure out how to get back up the well after you get the lantern? And, like he's, like, picking these kids' brains. Like, my grandfather's a 50-year-old man at the time. He's trying to figure out this game. It's, like, probing these, like, you know, preteen kids on how to play this game.
Small children. Well, that's why people wanted the NES Classic Edition, and
exactly.
Now it's not happening.
But like I'm saying though, like when I bought the physical copy of that cart, that it only ran me $7. And in my head, I was like, I'm really surprised this isn't worth more. Now, granted, it wasn't a highly rated game and stuff like that. That game is kind of wonky in its own ways, and it's really obtusely hard in some other ways. So I can understand why it wouldn't be considered like a classic, but. Then a gold cartridge for Legend of Zelda, that's gonna run you $90 in some places. So like who really determines the value of these things? It should be up to the person playing it. Now, realistically though, it is, because if I want to go and take the time to get everything together, I'm gonna go find a ROM of Mylon's Secret Castle and play it on my computer. And then I can go back and play that game again. But I might not go and get a ROM of Legend of Zelda because I've played that game to death. I've played through Legend of Zelda probably 10 or 12 times. So I don't know. It's really irritating because at some point emulation is going to eclipse the manufacturer and these companies like Nintendo's ability to make buying it again enticing.
Well, it already started happening with even the NES Classic Edition started getting modded with all these games and everything. And I think that's another reason why Nintendo just said, fuck it. Why should we keep putting more of these out there when you guys are just going to emulate our product and illegally put all these ROMs on there?
I mean, yeah, I can understand it from a business standpoint, but they still got your $60. Like, you paid the $60 to have that box that looks like a NES. So in reality, like what it really comes down to is, in reality, they're controlling the distribution of an emulation platform. They should look at it like that. Like, the people are going to find the ROMs anyway. The people have been finding the ROMs since the internet was a thing. Like, as soon as someone found out that they could do a ROM dump onto their computer and then put it on a forum somewhere to allow other people to get their hands on that game, like, they already lost. Because if you want to go through and go through the trouble, you can play those games, no problem. I could play every... If I wanted to and be a real jackass, I could sit here and I could go through chronological order of every Nintendo game up until the last Nintendo game that was ever produced on my freaking computer and play all of them and not spend a dime. But if they gave me that box that looks like a NES or looks like a Super Nintendo or is just some officially licensed thing that's like, hey, this will perfectly emulate the ROMs that you're going to get your hands on anyway, people would buy it. Even if it was $100. If it was $100 and had Bluetooth and came with controllers, I didn't have to, stand 4 feet away from the thing to play and just, like you hook it up via HDMI and it's all good to go, yes, people would buy that thing. 100%. I'd buy one right now.
Yeah, and that's another problem that Nintendo did. They didn't make it Wi-Fi enabled where you can download ROMs yourself by purchasing it off the eShop.
Yeah, like,
and if people did that, they could have made so much more money.
Yeah. But, and that's the thing too, is like I think they were trying to appeal to a much more, like, to a much smaller audience and trying to, like, reel in those people that that don't really play games but remember those old Nintendo games.
Yeah.
So, like, at some point, you know, some, you know, soccer mom is like, oh man, I remember playing freaking Contra with my older brother or whatever when I was little. Like, yeah, I'll buy this thing for my kids so they can play these games. Like, they're Nintendo games. Cool. But then, like, those soccer moms or soccer dads, you know, what have you, see that thing. And then, of course, the guys like you and me that grew up playing this crap see that thing. And, like, we get way more excited about it. We're like, holy crap.
Oh, absolutely.
It looks like a tiny NES. It fits in my hand. Like, I can put it up on a shelf when I'm not playing it, and it looks so freaking rad. All that stuff. Yeah, of course, they were going to be the ones to go after it. And then once they get their hands on it and they realize what it is, and it's like, okay, this thing has 30 games. Now I can figure out a way to put more on it, because those people are going to figure out the way. Like life finds a way, Wally.
Absolutely.
So
I agree. And retro gaming has blown up over the past 4 or 5 years, like I mentioned, because for some reason everybody wants these games. And now all of a sudden, like, retro gaming has blossomed into, like, this whole empire on its own, like you know?
Yeah. Well,
Nintendo completely missed the mark on that. Completely missed the mark.
Yeah. They could make... It's so funny, too, because Nintendo, over the past years, with, like, the Wii and the Wii U and even the Switch, has been trying to find that thing that is going to hook people to bring them back to Nintendo. And realistically, like, as much as I hate to say it, I agree with a lot of other, you know, personalities in games media and stuff like that, where, like, maybe Nintendo needs to just give up the ghost and just make software. Like, look, man, I love that they have so many, like, they must have a bunch of mad scientists over there. They have to come up with something like the Wii U. To think that it's like, oh, it's like a gamepad you hold in your hand, but you can't get more than, like, 10 feet away from the console, otherwise it doesn't work. But, you know, then to eventually come up with something like the Switch, where it's like, yeah, you can remove the controllers and you can take it with you. Like, there's some Frankenstein-esque scientist over there that is coming up with this stuff. And I love them for that, because Nintendo will always be weird. And yep, a weird Nintendo is always a funny Nintendo to me. But it doesn't make a lot of sense in the business sense of things, because when it really comes down to it, we just want to play those games. Like,
yep,
like things like Splatoon and stuff like that, all those new IP, they're all super cool. And, like, I think that they're great, and they should have a place, but there's no reason for them to just keep denying the fact that people want to play Super Mario World. People want to play Earthbound. People want to play Star Fox, because you play those games because they're just a much more simplistic experience, but they're, like, the perfect distillation of that simplistic experience, because it was made by Nintendo, and Nintendo essentially has perfected the art of making a game that is both enjoyable, but you can get you can wrap your head around. So, I don't know. It kind of makes me sad, because, like, I've realized now over the course of the past couple years that, like, yeah, maybe they should just be a publisher. Maybe they should just be a developer.
Yeah, but like you said, like, you want that Nintendo experience. You want that Nintendo system. And do you really want to be playing Mario and Zelda on, like, a PlayStation or an Xbox or any future console or a PC?
But,
like, would you really want that, though?
I mean, yeah. Like, think about it. Could you imagine what Nintendo could do if they were able to make games for PC? Like, yeah, if they became their own publisher developer and started pushing games to like Steam. Yeah, okay, Steam is going to take a cut of your freaking money, but hey, you're Nintendo. Congratulations. You just cracked into the largest distribution platform on Earth. So now you can make games that are just completely bonkers, batshit crazy powerful, because people are going to be playing this stuff with, like, you know, with modern GPUs and, like, more RAM than you can shake a stick at, you know, multi-screen experiences and stuff like that. Nintendo wants to do all this weird stuff with their games and hardware, Forget the hardware side of it, because PC gamers are about as weird as it gets anyway. Like, my cousin has three monitors sitting in front of him at his house to play games like Elite Dangerous and, you know, like controller peripherals and all kinds of stuff out the wazoo. Like, he just recently got a freaking a keyboard that will Bluetooth connect to his phone to give him stat readouts for certain games. Like, that's one, that's pretty freaking rad. Good on you, Chris. But two, like, Nintendo wants to do weird stuff with hardware and software. Like, let the players get the weird stuff with the hardware and just make awesome, powerful games. And they would rule the world. And then if they wanted to, they could get back into freaking hardware again once they have all of the money. Like, just all the money.
Well, we saw how Sega started to spiral down after they just started developing games. And look at the whole Sonic franchise now. That thing is dead.
Yeah, but Sega still makes games. If Sega was still trying to compete with hardware, they would be done for. If they had tried to make something after the Dreamcast and had been like, no, guys, we got one more in us, like, they would be dead in the water now. They would have had to sell off, and then someone would have just bought the IP, and you'd never see the Sega game ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, the Sega name, sorry. But because they were smart enough to be like, no, we need to take a step back. We need to get out of hardware, focus on software, because we do have good franchises, and we're able to make games that people want to play, they're able to stay afloat. You still see the Sega logo on games.
Yeah, so the whole 2K franchise and all of that, I mean, it's all Sega.
Yeah, so in reality, it's not a bad thing that they went to being a publisher-developer. That was almost inevitable anyway. So it's better than them being dead in the water.
But we're losing the icon, Tony. That's the thing. We're losing the Sonic icon, and I'm worried that if that happens to Nintendo, that we're gonna lose the Mario icon. We're gonna lose Zelda. We're gonna lose the whole Mario Kart thing.
I see. That's the thing. I don't think that would ever happen. Even if they went third party, I don't think they would ever. Like, they would still own those characters regardless. And people are always going to want to play a Legend of Zelda game. People are always going to want to play a Mario game. People are always going to want to play Mario Kart and Donkey Kong and stuff like that. Like, they're always going to want to play those games. But it's not helping them out in the long run when all they do is lean on the primary three. So, like, you know, Kart, yeah. Mario, and Zelda. And then have to invest everything else into making hardware. Like, why not bring back all your old franchises that people miss and just make software? You know what I mean? Like, you could have another Metroid. Yeah, exactly. Everybody wants a Metroid. People have been wanting a Metroid for the last 10 years.
Yeah, where the hell is Metroid, Nintendo? Come on.
Yeah, for real. Please. All right, so I think we've beaten that horse to death as far as the discontinuation of the NES Classic. Nintendo, you got to get your shit together. But hopefully the future will look brighter with this supposed rumor of the Super Nintendo Classic. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to go into our wish list of games that we would like to see on a SNES Classic. We will be right back.
When it comes to your education, there's no need to settle. Get the interactive and purposeful education that you and employers demand from Colorado State University Global Campus. You'll get personalized, career-driven learning created and taught by today's industry leaders. CSU Global was built to help students succeed with affordability, flexibility, and individualized support. It's time to expect better. Find your path to the career you want at csuglobal.edu, where online education isn't another thing we do. It's all we do.
And we are back from our regularly scheduled commercial break. I don't know. So now that we've talked about what Nintendo's been messing up real bad, let's get into what we hope will happen with the SNES Classic Edition. So real quick, I'm going to just look up something really fast.
Okay.
I want to see the proposed rumored dates, because I think this is hilarious.
Okay, well, so everybody is crossing their fingers for the whole Christmas season and all of that, but as we saw with the NES Classic Edition, that's not always a good thing.
So, okay, so this comes again from Polygon. Thanks, Polygon. All right, so the SNES Mini, or to continue Nintendo's official branding, likely the Nintendo Classic Edition Super Nintendo Entertainment System, is currently scheduled to launch in time for Christmas this year. This is from a statement from Eurogamer. Development of the device is already underway, our sources have indicated. So, Eurogamer is a pretty reliable source when it comes to like stuff that ends up in that starts out rumors and actually ends up being true. So I think it's pretty safe to say that we can look at this as a pretty much a certainty at this point. So with that, let's get into our wish list of games we'd like to see on it. Now, this is not a new concept. Tons of other podcasts and shows have done, you know, games they hope will end up being on there. But let's dive into it. So, Wally, you start us off. What is your wish list of games, and why do you think some of those games deserve to be on there?
Well, these aren't necessarily my favorite games, but these are the games I would expect Nintendo to put on the system first and foremost. And first off is Super Mario World, because that was like their first pack-in game with the Super Nintendo, and you know, it just brought everybody to buy the system. Number two would be Earthbound, because that is a classic in its own right. Everybody wants that game right now, and to have that emulated onto a mini SNES would be amazing.
Yeah, agreed.
And number three, probably the best game on the Super Nintendo of all time, and maybe you can agree with me, you know where I'm going with this, is Zelda Link to the Past.
Yeah, that is almost a given. Like, that game has to be on there, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Number four I wrote down is Super Punch-Out, because Man. You need a Punch-Out on your system, just like they did with the NES Classic Edition and the whole Mr. Dream crap.
Yeah, I was really upset that it was, you know, Punch-Out featuring Mr. Dream, but they weren't gonna put the Mike Tyson one on there, only because of, well, one, getting the Tyson license, but two, just that game was not gonna, people wouldn't be too happy about having Tyson on there, I don't think.
I did not expect to see the Tyson one on there, but Mr. Dream,
yeah,
we'll still play it, but right. Number five, this one would be awesome, is Mario Kart.
Yeah.
One that started it all. Number six, Donkey Kong Country.
So, like, so just the first Donkey Kong Country or none of the other ones?
Well, you can put the whole franchise on there if you want, and hopefully they do, but number three kind of sucked. I'm just going off on a tangent right now. One and two were the best, so check out one and two if you want to play that series, but...
Yeah.
Completely avoid number three.
Yeah, three. Yeah, three was not great, but yeah.
Number seven is Mega Man X, and just like Donkey Kong Country, you can put the whole franchise on there, but I just chose the first one because, you know, it's Mega Man.
Yeah,
and there's so many of them, and they're all really good.
I think there was three, as far as I remember, there were three X games for the Super Nintendo, and yeah, the first one is amazing. The robot masters of the, or you know, the Mavericks get a little weird as it goes through the lines of like, you start with like torpedo octopus and stuff like that, and then pretty soon it's like there's an ostrich, and I'm like, come on, dude, like, just come on.
Yeah, they kept making it weirder as it went along, but you know, they're still all great games.
Yep.
Number eight, Super Metroid. This game, you know, everybody loves Metroid, the whole franchise. I believe there's only one on the Super Nintendo, so
yeah,
that's the one to put on there.
It's considered to be one of the best Metroids as far as like a 2D Metroid is concerned. So, I mean, it just makes sense to have it on there.
Number nine, and there was two of these games on the system. So, Final Fantasy III I chose over Final Fantasy II.
Hmm. Okay.
They're both great. Graphically, Final Fantasy III is better, and the whole music and sound is just blows two away. So I chose Final Fantasy III.
Okay.
Number 10 is Street Fighter II.
Yeah. Man.
I loved it so much more on the Super Nintendo than I did the Sega. I mean, it's totally objective. You guys can like whatever you want to like, but I liked it so much better on the Super Nintendo because of all the buttons and the control, it just felt right. It felt natural.
Yep.
So I chose that as my top 10. I still have more, but you know what? What do you go with, Tony?
So Now, all of my picks are assuming that Nintendo could get any license that they go for. Like, yep. It doesn't matter, you know, third party, like what the IP would cost to bring it back on there, stuff like that. Doesn't matter. So I'm going to start out with one that a lot of people are going to look at me like, what? But Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that game came out on the Super Nintendo and on the Sega, and in my opinion, that game was way better on the Super Nintendo. And I freaking love that game. Next would be the Lost Vikings and Lost Vikings 2.
Completely forgot about those games.
Oh, dude, those games are so good. Like,
no, they are.
That whole genre of like multi-character, like character management and using the different abilities and stuff like that to get through the different levels and stuff. So good. Just, man, I love those games. So then after that, so that's, let's see, that's three. Then after that, I have to go with, of course, Sunset Riders, because as much as that game, like I said, that game is not the best shoot 'em up ever, but man, it is just a really fun game to play. And it's one of those games you can hop in with two, you know, with another player and just have a ball go through. And
it
just,
is the Wild West Contra.
I mean, yeah.
That's what it can be described as.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, did you ever play Gunsmoke on the NES?
Yes, a long time ago I did.
So Gunsmoke was essentially just a top-down shooter, much like Guerrilla Warfare and Commando, a bunch of other games like that. But, you know, set in the Old West and stuff and, you know, based off of a TV license, of course. But essentially, Sunset Riders was the side-scrolling shoot-em-up version of Gunsmoke, and I thought it was just such a cool game. Like, it seems like such a cool, like, evolution of what Gunsmoke was, and then you go to Sunset Riders, and you're like, oh, this is way cooler. And then you get the, you know, there's the cattle stampede in the first level, and you gotta run on the cows and stuff. So good. And then after that, I have to go with something near and dear to my heart, and I have to go with Sparkster, the Rocket Knight. So are you familiar with Sparkster?
I have seen the game. I've not played the game, so you're gonna have to describe this one for me, Tony, because I have no idea. Like,
okay, so how this gameplay works. In the deep dark days of video game mascot warfare, Sega had Sonic and Nintendo had Mario, and people were trying to come up with like mascot games, and just trying to come up with something that would, you know, hook people. And Sparkster was a possum. Mm-hmm. That was also a knight with a magical sword, but he also had a jetpack. So essentially, he could like zip around the levels with his jetpack and could shoot beams from his freaking sword. But also, there were like platform traversal areas where you would slide down rails with his possum tail, and like you could pick up speed and use it like to launch yourself and then launch yourself further with the jetpack and stuff.
Nice.
Those games are so good. Now, there's a whole bunch of different versions of the game. Like, there was a game on the Sega that is technically a, like, I guess a, what's the word I'm looking for? A, like, sequel to the first Sparkster game on the Super Nintendo. And then, of course, they came out with Rocket Knight Adventures, which is, like, a, like, another entry in the franchise for PC, which I've played extensively, and I do really like that game a lot, even though they changed a lot of stuff about it. And it just, I don't know why I like that game so much, only because I think I like it so much because it was like the one like mascot based game where at the end of the day I liked the character and I liked the gameplay enough to be like, huh, you know what, I should show this to my friends, and then my friends liked it and so on and so forth, and it just went down the line. And then finally, because I am just a jerk like that, I had to pick Earthworm Jim. Because Earthworm Jim was so much fun.
And so why'd you choose this one over, like, say, the Sega one?
Honestly, because the games don't play too much differently when it comes to just the overall, like, how each game plays between the different systems and stuff like that. I just think that the fact that Earthworm Jim was on both, and as a kid that, like, I had a Sega, but, like, later on, like, many years after I had my my Super Nintendo, like, every time I would play a game that was on both systems, I would always just kind of default to playing it on the Super Nintendo. And
yeah, exactly.
That's just kind of where my heart always lied. There were certain games, obviously, on the Sega that were better on the Sega than they were on the Super Nintendo, like Mortal Kombat, things like that. But
11?
Yeah. Well, see, I don't know, man. That's a tough...
You like the Super Nintendo version of Aladdin better than the Sega one?
Dude, I beat the Super Nintendo version of it. Everyone was like, this game's so hard. And I'm like, no, you're just a punk. And I can defeat Jafar, no problem. I mean...
I love the Sega version so much better. You have a sword. You have a sword. There's a sword on the cover of the Super Nintendo one. But he doesn't have a sword. And he's just jumping on shit.
See, in the movie, though, he doesn't have that sword until, like, the very last fight. So, in my opinion, it doesn't make sense in the canon of Aladdin for him to have a sword from the get-go. Like, where did he get this sword? Why didn't he have this sword when the guards were chasing him in the first part of the movie? Like, he could have you know, got some more money or, like, you know, killed one of the guards or something like that to get around. You know, Disney could have went, like, R-rated with it. But instead, he's running around. Hey, I'm just saying, dude, he didn't have a sword in the beginning of the movie. He shouldn't have a sword in the beginning of the game. Plus, I think the level where you're flying on the carpet and you're trying to get out of the Cave of Wonders was way better on the Super Nintendo than it was in the Sega, because just, I don't know, in my opinion, it played a lot more smoothly, but that's just me.
I hated both of those, though. They were so amazingly hard, and I kept dying on each one of those.
No, you want to talk about a Disney game, like, we'll have to get into that. That's a whole other episode, is like the Disney games that just drove us freaking bananas. But the Lion
Disney
King...
Game Yeah, we
dude, I'm telling you, the Lion King game on the Sega made me want to gouge my eyes out. There's so many things about that game where I'm just like, this is not well done. This is not good at all.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to know,
I like those games, but they were amazingly hard. Lion King, I should say.
Oh, dude, the Lion King game on the Sega was stupid hard. But again, that's another topic for another podcast. So we have one more subject for this particular class, and it is about something that Wally has done some extensive research on. So I'm going to let Wally lead this off. Wally, tell me about this. Is it – how do you pronounce it again?
At Games or AT Games, however you want to call it. Yeah. I call it At Games. They're coming out with an HD Sega Genesis. Okay. Coming out on September 15th, it should have HD components. And it was first, I read it on SegaNerds.com, but because here at Binary Gamer, we always cite our sources. But it's going to have 720p output, and it's going to have save features. So that just blows away the whole, or what they did before. It's going to have Phantasy Star in there as well.
Ooh.
As one of the new games. Or Phantasy Star 4, I should say. I'm sorry to...
No, I'm I mean, I, to, no, I, mean I really like the Phantasy Star games. That's awesome.
And it's going to be modeled after the Genesis 1.
Oh, nice.
Rather than the Model 3 that they did. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I was able to gather. And it's going to retail for $60, which is totally affordable, which is what the NES Classic did. I think they came out with this to rival the NES Classic, but now they don't even have any competition.
I was going to say, they're not going to have any competition until the holiday season, and realistically, yeah, they're coming out before then anyway, so they'll be able to sell units hand over fist before the holiday comes around and the SNES Classic comes out. So besides Phantasy Star, what else is going to be on there, does it say?
Pretty much the same package as before. You got Sonic 1 and 2, you got the Mortal Kombat game. There's a Comic Zone.
Nice. Oh, man. Comic Zone was so good.
It was so good, but so hard, too. Like,
well, because you had that, like, really obtuse timer that you were trying to beat, which is funny because I think the best way to play that game is with a Game Shark. And then you...
Oh, absolutely.
Or no, pardon me, not a Game Shark, a Game Genie. And then you would just eliminate the timer, and you could actually play through the whole game. Because it never failed. Every time I play that game, I would die at the same spot every time because the timer would run out. So crazy.
Well, yeah, because you had to worry about jumping through the panels too, and it was like this whole thing where you had to like fight every single one, and it was just so mind-blowingly hard.
Yeah, that game was really awesome though. Like, I can't think of another game that's done that whole like panel switch thing, like done like an aesthetic like that before.
Yeah, I don't think there is one. I can't think of any. Yeah. At least.
So okay, so Comic Zone. Then what else?
I'm just going from the top of my head here.
Oh, wait, do they have Columns?
Yes, Columns is on there.
Columns is one of my favorite Sega games ever.
Yeah. there's it's gonna be the typical 40 Sega games with the 40 shovelware games that are like thrown in there, like Mr. Balls or Memory or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was no word on whether they're gonna fix the wireless controls, because those things were horrendous. They work like a TV remote. And there's no word if they fix the sound, because everybody who has one of those or who has played one of those complains about the goddamn sound, and it is awful. So, I mean, I couldn't find anything on that.
I mean, but if it's going to be a HD re-release, I mean, you would assume that it's going to have, like, HDMI out. So the sound problem should be kind of fixed, because if I remember the original one, because my buddy Bobby has the original one. So first off, it ran off RGB, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So it was a composite out, and then it also takes cartridges, right?
Yeah, it takes. Yeah. It's not compatible with all of them, but most of them you can get them to work. So
see that's pretty rad, and I think that's something that had they done that with the NES Classic. Now, granted, it was too small to fit an actual NES cartridge into, but if they could have had some type of like peripheral that you could have bought for like another $20 to where you could put a cart in and play that cart off of it. Dude,
oh, that would have been amazing.
That would have been smashing, because realistically, that would have solved a lot of the problems when it came to people
booting
other ROMs onto there, because now you have a way to take the collection that you might have or find a way to build a collection and play other games aside from the stock 30 that are on there. And realistically, actually, no, this is like the best idea we've ever had, because they'd already put the games on there that you're going to have like a really hard time either getting your hands on or going to be so expensive that you're not going to buy it. Like Legend of Zelda. Legend of Zelda, you can go buy a gray cart. That's fine. But if you try to get your hands on the gold cart, it's not going to work for you because it's going to be so damn expensive. Not to mention the battery and the...
Yeah, they don't work anymore. They're dead.
Yeah, the battery inside the chip, you're not going to be able to save your progress. So you don't have that problem if it's already emulated onto the system natively. But then games like, you know, like I said, like Mylon Secret Castle or like RC Racing, stuff like that. If you find that at just a random like pawn shop or a garage sale, suddenly now you have that game. You can slap it into your NES Classic and you're good to go. Like, man.
Exactly.
Nintendo, listen to this show and take our advice and do these things and then cut me a check at the end of the year. It's fine. Make sure you send Wally one too.
Yup. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
It's just like the NES Classic Edition. The one thing I'm thrilled about, and you mentioned this, is the save feature, because they didn't have that before, and that's why they didn't put Sonic 3 on there, is because you had the whole save feature on Sonic 3. You only had the first two Sonics, and hopefully they put Sonic 3 on there, because I didn't see. But
yeah,
that
like,
would be amazing.
Sonic 3 and then Sonic and Knuckles would be rad. But
yeah,
Sonic and Knuckles was such a weird cart. Do you remember that? Like, it had the little like flip top on the top where you would put Sonic 1 or 2 on, and then Sonic 2 or 3. It wouldn't work with 1. And I remember I tried putting 1 in there one time to see what it would do, and it just gives you that screen of like, this game's not compatible, and it's Sonic waving his finger, and I'm just like, oh, you got me, Sega. Good job.
It was the first DLC of its day. That's
real.
Pretty much what it was.
And it was cool to play as Knuckles on like the chemical plant zone,
mm-hmm.
or like, ah, oh, man, it was so cool. Ah, oh, man, so many awesome things.
See, now September 15th, Tony, $60. Hopefully this thing does come out and it doesn't disappoint.
Like, okay, you know what would be the best thing that Sega could do? Like, we're talking about these, like, you know, Nintendo should go into, you know, just publishing and things like that, which I stand firmly by that notion at this point in my life. For a while, I was like, no, man, Nintendo needs to make hardware, but nah, man, got to give the ghost on that one. Sometimes you got to be an adult about it. But talking about, like, Sega and how now they're, like, you know, they're a publisher-developer and they're, you know, they're making games, but they're not making hardware anymore. Could you imagine what would happen to the internet if Sega decided to make something like the NES Classic for the Dreamcast? That would be amazing. Oh my God. Cause there are so many good games in the Dreamcast. You're never going to get anywhere else. Like they didn't come out anywhere else unless it was in the arcade, like freaking Crazy Taxi or, you know, like Sega Bass Fishing and stuff like that. But there are other awesome games.
Shenmue.
Oh, dude. Well, I mean, now, like, there's ways to actually get Shenmue and a lot of other places, because for some reason that game has such a hardcore following. But like, what is it? Like the Echo the Dolphin, Defender of Time, or freaking like Power Stone. Power Stone 1 and, 1 and 2. Stone, yeah. Jiminy Xmas, dude. I would love to be able to get my hands on Power Stone 1 and 2, because like, I have a Dreamcast sitting right above me on the shelf right now. It's the one system that I own that isn't a modern system. Because
it's
love...
way too expensive.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is like trying to find games. And I recently found a copy of Power Stone 2, and that freaking thing is $75 at this game shop. And I keep telling myself, one day I'm going to buy it. Like, one day, if it's still there, I'm going to get it. Because I have a lot of principles, but I have a lot of principles, Wally. One of them is I will never pay more than $60 or the retail price of a game. But I'm willing to bend it this one time for Power
Stone
2.
Sometimes you got
to
do it, Tony. Dude, sometimes you got to do it.
I want that game back so bad. That game is so good.
Get it today. Get it today.
Oh, yeah. Just got to run to... well, actually, it's Sunday. So, unfortunately, that's not going to happen because in the South, they don't work on Sundays. I could do it. God, I could do it. And I would probably end up regretting it. But, God, I would play the bejesus out of that game, dude. Oh, my God. The game is so good. It has no right to be that good, but it is so good.
Pick him up before he goes up.
I'm telling you.
These retro games are only going up, Tony, and you close your eyes and fall asleep and wake up the next morning, it's going to be $150.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding.
Well, no, I mean, you speak truth, dude, but it's, yeah, it's going to have to happen at some point.
So what do you think about this Sega system? Would you pick one up?
Yeah, for sure. Like, there's a lot of those games, like, especially the Phantasy Star games. The Phantasy Star games are such a really underrated and underutilized license when it came to RPGs. And, I mean, you know, as bad as the Sonic games are, they're still fun to play if it's like, I got, you know, a little bit of time to kill and you're just going to run through the levels and, you know, have a couple, like, 8-year-old flashbacks and stuff. But, I mean, for the most part, a lot of the games that are on there, yeah, I would play 100%. But the fact that it has cart compatibility, that's really cool because, I mean... it doesn't work with all of them, and that kind of sucks, but there are certain ones that it will work with, and it's like, it's really nice to have that option to be able to, like, go to a yard sale or, like, a secondhand store and be like, oh, snap, there's a copy of freaking, not Choplifter, I almost said Choplifter, of, like, Desert Strike, and, you know, pick up Desert Strike and throw it in there and go around and shoot stuff with a helicopter for a little while, or, you know, there's all kinds of really cool games that Sega, like, came out with that weren't on that actual little console, so... Yeah, I would 100% pick one of these things up. $60, and it's HD. As long as it is HDMI out, 100%, dude. 100%.
Well, I have the original one, and one of the cool things is that they have Golden Axe 3 on there, because we didn't get Golden Axe 3 here in America.
Oh, that's
and that's
right.
Probably the best one of the three games, and I just love playing that game. Like, that game alone makes me want to hook up the Ad Games Genesis and just play it, because
yeah,
I can't find a copy of that game.
Man, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about the fact that, yeah, like, when I was a kid, I only played the first two Golden Axe games. And then, yeah, I remember seeing Golden Axe 3 on there because, like I said, my buddy Bobby has the one that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember seeing Golden Axe 3, and I was like, I don't remember playing Golden Axe 3. And then I sat down and played it, and I was like, oh, man, this game is dope. What was the Golden Axe game that was in the arcade?
I believe it was the first one.
The one that, like, you were trying to fight Death Adder, and then you had the Centaur lady, you had the imp dude that had, not an imp, but he was a smaller dude, like a pitchfork or whatever, and then you had the warrior, and then you had, like, the barbarian guy, like the giant guy that had the dude on his back.
I believe that's the second one.
Yeah, that arcade game was so good. So good. I remember being at a movie theater, like, not to get off on a tangent before we shut down the episode, but, like, I remember being at a movie theater with my friends, and we had got there, like, stupid early, like, way earlier than we were supposed to for the movie, and so we went into the arcade, and they had a Golden Axe game on there, and there was already three people playing, and they needed a fourth, so I hopped on, started playing, and I remember playing through the game, and I remember I missed the movie because we beat the game. Like, I just kept pumping quarters into it, dude. And I was like, no, we're going to beat it. Like, these other three, like, total strangers were, like, down to get through the game and to finally beat it. And then we finally did beat it, and then I looked at my watch, and I was like, oh, no, I missed the movie. Like, my friends had already left, and they're like, yeah, we went and saw the movie without you. You were really deep in the Golden Axe. I was like, ah, oh, well.
Holy shit.
Dude, it
did
was.
Did this really happen?
Oh yeah, I mean, I was. Pff, this was forever ago. Like,
do you remember the movie though?
Oh man,
was it?
I went and saw
Page Master with Macaulay Culkin.
Was it Page Master? No, actually, as much as I hate to admit it, I actually have never seen Page Master.
No, you don't want to watch it.
No, is it that bad, really?
It's pretty horrible.
Oh man, it had Whoopi Goldberg and it had Christopher Lloyd. Like, I remember, so much about it from like secondhand accounts, but I've never actually seen it. No, I want to say it might have been Batman Forever. I think it was Batman Forever. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm 90% sure it was Batman Forever. And I remember being really irritated that I missed it. And then I went and actually saw the movie with one of my cousins like a few weeks later.
And you were extremely disappointed.
I mean, it's not the worst Batman movie by any stretch of the imagination. Batman Forever was the last Batman movie before Joel Schumacher decided to take the franchise and just completely screw it in the butt with a neon dildo and just turn Gotham City and all the characters into just the worst type of like neo-noir, like perky stereotypes in the entire world. Like, man, those like Batman and Robin was probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Not saying something, because I've seen some bad movies.
That had all the star power too, and that movie was bad.
Well, I still stand by the fact that George Clooney was never meant to play Batman in no way, shape, or form. Yeah, you don't put nipples on the bat suit, and and Alicia Silverstone should have never been allowed to play in a movie after Clueless.
Yeah, that's true.
There, I've said it. I've said it, Internet. I've said it.
Caster.
But I think now that we have completely gone off the rails and talked about how much I love hate Batman Forever, I think this is a good spot to wind down. What do you think, Wally?
Yeah, right on time. We covered pretty much the three classic consoles that we could.
Yep. All right, so thank you very much for listening to Binary Gamer. Remember, we are a weekly show over on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to Binary Gamer. Make sure you head over to YouTube.com/BinaryGamer, where we are going to start putting up more content, I promise you. I've just been slow rolling on getting these projects out because I sit down and I do some writing, and then something in life comes up and I got to take care of that. And then my writing ends up stopping and I can't start recording the video before I get the writing done. And it's a whole process. I need to just quit my job and just dedicate myself to YouTube as if it was 2007 again. And
exactly.
Just,
go
and, yeah. Yeah. Just go all the way. Yeah. Just forget about all my healthcare, stuff like that. Perfect. My kids don't need to go to college. YouTube will pay my kids way to college.
Exactly.
Said no one ever. You can also find us over on Twitter. I am at I Flip at the Switch, all one word, as it sounds, I Flip at the Switch. And of course, you can find Wally over on Twitter at The Retro Wall. And I think that is going to do it. So, for Binary Gamer, I am Tony Spears.
Wally Jacobs.
Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.